episode 94 of Drunk on Comics. The other day I was actually doing some reading about the evils on drinking, so I decided to stop reading.
That's a good plan.
Yeah. Speaking about evil, too, my house is haunted.
It's not haunted.
Yes, the ghost of Peter Parker's here.
Dude, okay, so for our listeners, Tony actually had some ghost hunters come to his house last night. Did you actually, please tell me that you did go, are you Peter Parker? Do you know who Peter Parker is?
To be honest, I did not, and I'm really pissed off at myself now. I had a few beers before they came because I knew I couldn't go out to the bars later, and I forgot.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
I'm going to...
What? So why did you have them stop by? What events happened in your house that you made them come out?
One of my action figures on my Wallow toys randomly fell off, which it's on a solid brick wall. So there's no way that, unless there's a huge earthquake, that would knock over one thing. This flashlight at the end of the hallway, which you can make it Ghost Hunter tuned, blinking on and off. Hearing voices while I'm in the shower, just... a thud in the middle of the night, like someone's walking around, like just weird shit.
My toys fell down. That's weird. That's so ridiculous.
Before we get too far into this, welcome to Drunk on Comics.
No, we didn't have to go any further into this.
Yeah, stop now.
Welcome to Drunk on Comics, everybody. Thanks, man. This is our weekly podcast where we talk about comic books, we talk about conventions, we talk about industry news, some other nerdly nuggets of fun, and occasionally we talk about Tony's haunted house or, you know.
Or other ghosts in the industry.
Yeah. Like we talk about toys falling. We're going to get things kicked off here with Off the Shelf, where we're going to discuss our favorite books from the week. Just as a heads up to all of our listeners, we sometimes actually talk about things that happen in the book themselves. So if you haven't read it, that's your warning that we may ruin little surprises and tidbits for you. Off the Shelf, once again, brought to you by Motor City Comic Con. And you can check them out at www.motorcitycomiccon.com. And you can come see us live in person and talk ghosts with Tony May 16th through the 18th at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi, Michigan.
It's going to be spooktacular.
There's going to be spooktacular savings, I know that for sure.
Yeah. So, Kevin, you want to kick us off this week?
So, all right. Well, here, I'm going to pass this around to you guys. I have to pass you around my tablet.
You started buying more books digitally.
Yeah, I've declared that I was going to start doing that mainly as a space issue than anything. I still like the feel, the holding of the book. I have yet another reason that it just happened the other day for me going to buying a few more digital books. I'm not going to go exclusively that route, but I had one of these self-adhesing bags.
Yeah.
And then what happened? Of course, the comic book touched it, and like, fuck.
That's why I...
Yeah, you don't tape your books.
Yep.
My attitude this week admittedly hasn't been quite in the mindset of enjoying comics. I read American Vampire, Second Cycle, Vincent Price's Presents Black and White. But then I realized quickly that I'm just not in the right mindset to read those type of books. So I pulled up a bunch of stuff that I knew was going to be lighter, lower brow stuff. So I read a bunch of Archie, some Sonic, and then I ran into a real independent
Sonic the Hedgehog?
Book.
Sonic?
Sonic the Hedgehog.
How's he doing?
Oh, fantastic.
So are you saying that Archie and Sonic are lowbrow? Is that what you're getting at? I take offense to that.
Well, I'd say maybe not lowbrow is the right word, but definitely lighter reading material.
Oh, yeah, that's
fine. That's probably where I should have gone, because I got low. I'm using lowbrow later on to describe what I'm going to be reading, a real independent gem called Cat Suit.
Yeah, I you passed that around for us to look at, and I was a little surprised. In a good way, but that's not what I would have expected you to pick up. And I don't mean that in a negative connotation.
Yeah, this was on the back shelf of Comixology. And by back shelf, I mean at the bottom of the list. But the description in summary reads, romance, violence, weed, adventure, alcohol, twists.
It was the booze that caught your attention, wasn't it?
Of course, absolutely. So the description was fine and dandy, and at $1.99 for 50 pages, I figured, why the fuck not?
That's not a bad deal.
No. But, I mean, it's what you get for a truly independent. Now, Cat Suit's written and drawn by Steve LaFleur, and he uses the publishing name Alternative Comics.
Okay.
Okay, so the quick summary of Cat Suit is that you have a guy, really there's a bunch of mystery around him.
Is he cousins of Catwoman?
What?
Well, because he's kind of got the cat suit, but he has, I like the little whiskers in the nose.
Yeah, but there's no character development in this story. I mean, there's absolutely none.
So
this is a random guy shows up in a cat suit.
No, so what do you think he does?
I don't know.
We know that he dresses up as a cat.
Yeah,
and actually he wants to be referred to as a Manx.
Okay,
he likes pussy.
Oh yeah.
So actually, wait. Now, Kevin, you did mention something. I think it was last week when you were reading this comic. Did you have were you stroking the pussy in your lap?
Actually, there was a cat in my lap. I didn't even think about that because it happens all the time where I just sit down and read my comics. There's a cat in my lap.
Yeah.
I'm the crazy cat guy.
How many cats do you have now?
I have three.
Yeah, that's a hell of a starter set. Right, that's all I say.
At least I don't have so many that I'm like throwing them at people. Crazy cat lady.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Continue.
Get back to crazy cat man.
So what does he like to do? He likes to spark up a left-handed cigarette and go clubbing.
What's a left-handed cigarette?
It's a joint.
What?
That's an old timey reference right there.
Wow, Tony, am I just out of it and not?
No, I did not know that.
You never heard of the left-handed cigarette?
No. Okay,
okay.
I bet you Jay over at An Elegant Weapon was probably familiar with that.
I don't know if that translates across borders.
Well, I mean, he still speaks English more or less, but you know, I mean, he's Canadian, so anyway,
a conversation topic perhaps with him, but I spark one occasionally. I could relate to that, so I already have a little bit of a connection with him. So the story, if you could call it as such, not much of one, is basically him going to the clubs. He has an occasional visit with his psychiatrist. There's a little bit of a budding romance. Well, as romantic as one can get when in the backseat of a car, she screams out, "Behold the wonders of the crotchless pantyhose."
This is sounding like a very, very interesting...
Lowbrow?
Yeah.
So, quick mention on the art. Surely in the art department, Cat Suit isn't going to win any awards. Sorry, Steve. But
it's very indie style in that, like, self-published indie style that, you know.
Yeah. For me, it wasn't, it definitely was, art is definitely not a contributing factor into this. But, you know, I could see some people saying, you know, this is me, this is my style. I'll pick it up.
But at the same time, if it was something that had that very finished look to it, it would, I think it would probably change the story, because just not me reading it, but me flipping through a number of those pages, it does set the mood.
Is he trying to be serious, or is it supposed to be kind of funny?
It's definitely funny.
Okay. And that's where sometimes you just enjoy it just to have some laughs.
Oh, yeah. Then this is the good time, fun romp that I needed to get me out of my funk. It's definitely lowbrow entertainment. It's quite diverse, I think. Plenty of humorous points, such as the Manx shooting a dart randomly at a waiter that has been saturated with Drano. Like, it was completely random. I mean, it's so the humor in the book is so offhand, is that if you were to, let's say, I don't know, I'm going to do one of these stretches for you guys.
Like yoga?
Yogi?
Bear?
Now, if you were to, like, talk to another person in the style of this book, and the person didn't know you very well, he'd think you were some kind of fucking whack job nut and push you down a bunch of stairs.
Well, if you dress as a cat, it works.
You might get some high fives or something.
There's an easy way around that. Don't be near stairs.
No, but this is the book. It was just completely off. It's a lot, very humorous. It was an enjoyable and surprise for what I paid for it.
Cool. Yeah, that's a. I gotta admit though, like, I'm glad that you try different shit like this sometimes, because you find weird shit that I've never even heard of, and I try and keep up on everything that's coming out.
Yeah, so. Let's say there have been some things where just random purchases I've pleasantly surprised, and I talk a lot on this podcast about value in comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, how many times did I mention $1.99 on this book, or $2.99 in that book, and not get enough value here? I've done that before, where I'm just like, okay, I'm going to pick up this independent book. It was $10. Picked it up digitally on a wing and a prayer and a kind of a half-assed description.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Anyway, this is a great book and worthwhile picking up.
Cool. Yeah, I might actually have to peruse through a couple pages.
Yeah,
and if I like it, yeah, I'll buy it.
We'll do that post show, definitely.
Awesome. All right. Well, excuse me, guys. I've got
something that's choking you up, apparently.
Actually, yeah. Actually, I had a few books that kind of choked me up this week.
What? Are you reviewing something in Spanish?
Yes, I am. I am reviewing something in Spanish. Yeah, I don't know what this advertisement...
New segment, review the back cover.
Yeah, review the back cover. Es un mundo nuevo. And,
Exclamation point.
Yeah. Although it does say, the first Mundo More advertisement, CA 2014, announcing it's a whole new world, following the acquisition of primal rival Daystar, and offering low prices, superior signal clarity, and high-level encryption for corporate users. I don't know what this is.
Okay, so listeners, Derek's unfurled his comic from his plastic bag, and all I saw was the back cover. I still have no idea what he's going to be talking about this week.
Yeah, I am talking about Lazarus from Image. I don't understand the advertisement on the back, but I didn't even pay attention to it.
Well, so. I just saw a pretty girl.
Yeah,
that's a cool cover, by the way.
This is a great cover, and
I was flipping through for another segment later in the show, comic book covers, and I didn't notice that one.
Yeah,
I like that.
Well, and actually, this is one of the things where we've talked about it before, where covers don't always correlate to the story itself.
Of course,
and a lot of it's because of the fact that covers are solicited far before the stories maybe even are finished or plotted or scripted or anything. But this cover actually does completely tie in with the book in here. I'm actually going to go pretty spoiler-free on this one, because there is a lot going on. And Lazarus number 7 from Image Comics, this is written by Greg Rucka. Art and letters by Michael Lark, with assistance from Brian Level, and colors by Santi Arcus. Michael Lark did the cover on this as well. For those of you that haven't either been, you know, if you're a new listener to the show, or if you haven't been reading this book and you aren't really aware, basically this is a futuristic type world where the boundaries between areas are actually held by individual families rather than governments. And each family has their own Lazarus, which is someone who is raised to believe that they are actually part of the family when one way or the other they were genetically created or whatnot, and they can heal and almost come back from the dead. I mean, like severe wounds that would kill just about anybody else, they'll actually heal. They have almost the Wolverine healing factor. In this book, a little, you know, right on the nose, but the girl from the main girl in this book from the Carlisle family is Forever, is her name. Which it's like, okay, you're the Lazarus, you can keep coming back. That's my only gripe with the entire book. My only gripe. But that my main reason for wanting to talk about this, if you haven't been reading this, yes, you can jump in right here. That's the first thing. It's not going to be easy, but you can. But I do know that volume one of this came out in trade here about a month ago, and I think it covers issues 1-6. So really easy to pick up and jump on board with that. This one does do a little bit of back and forth between here, where Greg Rucka takes you back to when Eve or Forever is younger and she's training. And basically the woman that trains her from the time that she's incredibly young up until the time that she's, you know, maybe 10-ish, I'm guessing, in this book, is actually more of a mother to her than any of the rest of her quote-unquote family is family to her. And what is going to happen is that she's actually going to have to end up fighting her trainer at some point, and she has to beat her trainer in order to complete and move on to the next step. And it's incredibly touching when you see some of the stuff that she goes through, because the trainer actually has to physically beat this girl with like a cane so that she can learn how to withstand pain. And, you know, you just see this young girl standing there, and the trainer doesn't want to do it, but she has to. I mean, it's her job, because the way that these families are set up, you have families, the next step down are then serfs, and then below that, and you're talking one family may have anywhere from 2 to 7 people in it. For those people, you may have 20 to 100 serfs, and then the entire rest of the population is referred to as waste. And it's a very, very dark and grim world. And so to be a serf, you know, you're not even part of the 1%. You're part of the, like, 0.1%, you know. And so, I mean, your family's taken care of. You have no option. But there are some gut-wrenching moments in here when this young version of Forever looks at her trainer and she goes, "If Father orders me to kill you when I fight, what do I do?" And she goes, "You kill me." And she goes, "And if Father orders you to kill me," she goes, "then I will." You know, and it really sucks you in, and it brings you into how real this unrealistic world is. And I think that was one of the things that really, really brought me to loving this book and getting really drawn in. There's some there's actually a secondary story going on in here with people who are part of Waste or the Waste. And there's a lot of tragedy in this one as well, and I'm actually not going to spoil that. This book actually went a couple pages longer than normal, and they actually address it in the back, and it's one of the things that I really like about this book is that it's one of the few books where I'll read the back pages, because...
Is it just letters, or is it actually some comments from the writer?
Well, there's some really interesting stuff, because, like, you know, they put notes in here, which is, it's supplemental information about the families and characters and, you know, the world itself, which you don't have to read, but it really adds to the entire story.
Blood type? Do they talk about blood type?
No, but they, like, this one, for instance, is the Moray family. It's got family name, business name, head of family, marital status, line of succession, the domain, their motto, who their Lazarus is, and then the history of the family, and it goes on, and you know, there's a lot of really good info in it.
You guys know about blood type, right?
Yeah, type O, type A.
Well, yeah, oh. but how in some cultures your blood type is a determination of how your personality and
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it's like a star sign, kind of.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
Well, here's something great because I didn't realize when I read this that there's actually another page on the back.
So you just stopped reading after you didn't go all the way through reading pages?
See, I just randomly read my comic books.
No, like I kind of flipped the page and it didn't look like it was actually. Maybe I had a few fucking beers. Let me look.
Okay, I see what you're saying. It looks like looks like an ad.
Yeah, it looked like an ad, and I wasn't paying attention. But that explains the ad on the back of here, the Mundo Nuevo. Is part of the Moray family. So the ad on the back is actually part of the story.
So it's part of the book and not just a random...
Oh, man, so you got a bonus.
Yeah.
Wow. Good thing you're reviewing that in depth this morning.
Yeah. Wow. So now I got to go read. I got another page to read. I'll be back. but anyway, yeah. Rucka does a really, really nice job, though, of just creating this... very, very layered world with a lot of characters, but he does such a nice job where sometimes when there's so many characters, you forget who is who. This one you don't. And it's everything from the small things of when people come into the room, they're being addressed by name, you know, where you're like, oh, okay, you know, but awesome writing. The art in this book is it's fantastic. I love what Lark's been doing on here. And the one thing that I really enjoy is that there are very, very few large panels or splash pages. There are a number of panoramic panels in here. And he really works well with negative space on here. You add in the colors in here from Arcus. And it's just a very beautiful book all the way around. So this is one of those books where I think if you're not reading it and you want something that's different, that's not your standard superhero book, you have to go grab this one. I think it's just highly underrated out there. I know it's selling well, but you don't hear a whole lot about it. So give it a shot.
All right. I'm going to do a quickie right now. Because it was a really good book. And the way about how I got this book was last week was St. Patrick's Day. Every year I go and buy a box of Lucky Charms. Well, I went out and bought the huge box to get the free DC comic book that came in it. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. And the reason why I want to mention this is it's a pretty good book. I mean, it follows the Justice, the 8 of 9.
It's a mini book, though.
Kind of. And it obviously seems like shit was going on before within this storyline of these books. But it told an overall story between Cyborg and some other guy named Cybox, which is,
I don't know. Cybox kind of cereal?
Probably. If that's why they made up his name. But then ultimately at the end of it, it says, you know, see if Cybox returns home, blah, blah, blah. Go to BigSerialHeroes.com, which is what they also said is these stories will continue on online. And then the biggest thing, which is kind of funny that we were talking about your back cover, that I really enjoyed this, is on the back cover it's like, enjoy all the comics together as a family. Like, really getting your kids into reading comic books.
So did you go to the website?
I have not yet, no. But I plan on it. So this book in particular, though, was written by Josh Williamson, layouts by Dan Jurgens, and finishes by Norm Rampmund, and colorist Tony Avina. So,
dude, how awesome is that? My work's been in cereal boxes.
And it's gotten in the hands of a lot of people.
No, not on cereal boxes, but in.
Yeah, so thought that was a worthy mention. I might have to go get some.
Get some more cereal?
Yeah.
Just open the boxes. Just take the comics out.
That'd be bad.
Yeah, well.
But what I really want to talk about this week is Superior Spider-Man Annual. This, as in most annuals, has a lot of different people working on it. So I'm just going to go over everyone's name that was kind of involved. Christos Gage, Javier Rodriguez, Philip Briones, Olivero Lopez, Veronica Gandini. And there's actually kind of two stories within here. We'll go to the last story, too, where I need to bring up the page of who was who on what was what. Oh, actually, never mind. I should have read that ahead of time. It's some of the same people. So, now, something that me and Kevin were talking about off the air was annuals. They don't do much for the story.
You mentioned to me that you were doing an annual, and I'm like...
You did an annual.
Yeah, I did highlight an annual during it was probably it was 6 months ago or so.
Yeah,
because it was good, but it actually tied into a story. It was good, but I think that was about it.
Yeah, I'm going to totally agree. Some of the times they're just one shots and don't really tie in.
Yeah, see, I've never done annual. I just think the whole idea is gross. What? Shake your head at me.
Okay. Anyways, this one, it does tie into the overall story of what's going on with Green Goblin and the Goblin War. So it is tied in with continuity right now. I will say that it doesn't have a lot of sustenance towards that main story, but a story nonetheless, it was interesting. It's following Ben Urich, who is Phil Urich's uncle, who was the Hobgoblin, who within Superior Spider-Man got outed, and there's a lot of things that have been going on with that. And the precedent that I like that this book is kind of just thrown out there to readers to kind of say, here's our, you know, deus ex machina for when all this Goblin stuff goes down, is he was saying many times of how the Goblin formula, it already has precedent of when you get infected by it, you're insane, so legally you're not held responsible for anything you do. So already I'm kind of seeing, oh, so that's how they're going to just easily get all these people who have been turned into goblins, you know, not going to jail. So they're kind of writing ahead of time to say that can happen. But it also continues the story from Superior Spider-Man about the anti-formula that they're trying to do to save the goblins as well. Now, while he's, you know, trying to stop his nephew from being a goblin, stupid Robbie from the Daily Bugle comes on in and kind of ruins the day. I do like it that out of all the people that Peter Parker's had touched with, Ben was actually kind of safe. Out of all these goblin things, his nephew had enough sanity to say, we're not going to touch you, just get inside. Where most everyone's crazy and they don't really give a shit about people. The other big secondary story in here is Carly?
Yeah. Peter Parker's ex that has been turned into Monster.
Yes. And how you can see she's got some sanity a bit, but then keeps going back to the dark side. And while Wraith is coming in trying to, I don't know, stop her because she thinks she's evil, they actually perfect the formula, and now she's back to being human. So at least the formula works in a sense, but they don't have it all underway. So to be honest, Spider-Man wasn't in here except for, I think, a whole two pages. And I was like, if this is going to be Spider-Man Annual without Spider-Man, that will be interesting. But then he kind of showed up to save Ben, and yeah. Like I said, there wasn't a lot of sustenance towards the overall story, but it was still good nonetheless to see a different take following this reporter's thoughts on saving his nephew.
Here's my only thing with annuals like this, where, you know, and you mentioned it, there's so many people working on it that, you know, when you've got multiple writers, you've got multiple pencilers, you've got, you know, now... Actually, in this case, there's just one writer, so that was actually a little bit better than normal. But there's definitely there's a pretty significant shift in art style from the first story to the second. Which, just curiosity, did you have a preference?
I like the second one better.
See, I like the first one. And I think a lot of it has to do with the colors on there. It's got more of that pulp feel to it.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I don't know, I kind of like the second one because it's more of a new age.
Yeah.
I'm not as old as you, so.
Yeah, well, you know, and the first one actually is very similar to the Chris Somney Daredevil style of coloring in particular. Yeah. Not necessarily the art, but the coloring in there. And it reminded me a lot more of the old school comics from the 80s, where, you know, kind of just your good, solid, like, layouts of your panels. And it didn't try and get too experimental. It was just really good and grounded. And I liked a lot of the written sound effects of the fire, the whoosh and whoosh and all that. I thought that was like one of the best parts in there. Was it really did feel like the comics that I grew up with. I mean, yeah, there's a double page, you know, splash here and there, but overall it wasn't really pushing any boundaries. But that's a good thing for me in this story.
Yeah, it's a story that if you at least know what Superior Spider-Man is, you could pick it up and not have had to have read all the other comics to know what's really going on. But it develops some other characters a little bit better
by
reading it. And I have to say, the front cover is just kind of creepy.
It is creepy.
Yeah. Now, a little credit, though, Tony, I did just flip back, and you do have different artists and color artists on the last issue. Philippe Briones is the artist, and Veronica Gandini is the colors on that secondary story.
Okay. Well, I said Briones for the first one.
Did you?
Yeah. Maybe they're not the other person. Oh, well, credit where credit's due.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and Javier Rodriguez on the colors on the first one. I don't know if you said him because you said so many names. So, yeah, I guess. Okay. Well, hey.
Pay attention.
What? Yeah. Cool. All right, guys. Well, I think that does it for us for Off the Shelf. Once again, brought to you by MotorCityComicCon.com. Come see us in person in May, and you can touch us and stroke our hair. And
we're going to have a fun new game this year, which is help us solve the names, how to pronounce them. So if you have a better pronunciation than us.
Well, actually, we could probably just go ask a couple of the guys that are there that actually work in the industry and know them. Hey, you know this guy, right? Yeah. How do you say his name?
And then we'll listen, and then we'll forget the next day.
Yeah, and they'll be like, that's Steve Smith. Yeah.
Hey. So that's why when we go to these events, we carry the pocket recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can, you know, say it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we're just gonna drink and forget.
Yeah. Speaking of games, though, guys, March Madness is down, and you guys got your brackets filled out. All the stories that we're making. I mean, we're doing that again, right?
Nope.
God, man.
Abso-fucking-lutely not.
Dude, that was
so much fun.
That felt like homework.
Oh, God, it was. But
that was terrible.
It was fun.
Maybe for you. It certainly wasn't fun for me.
I love creative writing, but yeah, it also sucked, too. So I'm glad we didn't do that. And, well, the brackets this year, man. Whoa, I know that we're getting off of nerdiness of comic books and into sports world, but kind of got to
Yay, just, sports!
It's about as much sports you have, but
no. Well, for those who haven't been just recently followed us, last year about this time during this basketball celebration that's going on in college sports, we sort of did our own take of a bracket where we pair a superhero or supervillain with an actual team in this tournament, and
then whoever won the basketball game determined who won the fight.
Yeah, so you had some interesting premises like
Mr. Mixelplick versus Psylocke or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean the idea was kind of cool, but then Tony
made us write a story on each battle.
It was interesting, and I think the remnants of it still are on the website.
But, yeah, somewhere there. So,
but it was an interesting premise. So that's what that's all about. But
it was a test, testing our patience and our ability to do shit.
Derek, you don't have to watch any of that stuff. I'll watch enough for all of us.
Okay.
And I'll keep you abreast of what's going on in basketball.
And you let us know on news. You got any?
I do have some news. The first quick one that there really isn't a whole lot to say on it other than the fact that Kevin's playing with finger puppets right now.
I've been playing with them the whole damn episode.
I know, but like you've kept them under the table for the most part. San Diego Comic-Con sold out in 90 minutes again this year. Shocking, I know.
So. Damn. How many tickets?
What is it? 130,000?
Yeah, I didn't read that. You sent this over during the week, and I'm like, do I really need to? I guess the only reason why I wanted to read it, the article, which I didn't, obviously, is do they have computer problems this time?
No, like I mean, for the most part, it sounds like everything went smoothly.
Good, because that's they're morons. If I read that article again, if they had computer problems again,
yeah.
Because I mean, you know that people are going to do that. I mean, hell, they made fun of it on a recent episode of the Big Bang.
Yeah, where they're just going refresh. Yeah. Trying to get in. The news that came out this week that I think I'm actually most excited about, which is going to surprise listeners that know me, and I might actually surprise you
guys.
Am
I going to be surprised? Am I going to have to hold on to my seat?
I think you're going to be surprised that I'm this excited, is the DC covers that are coming out are going a little retro with pinup style covers.
How are we? Yeah, I'm not surprised that you'd like that.
You really, that's up your alley.
Yeah. Right, but here's the thing. It's a cover gimmick that's actually going to get me to buy DC Comics.
But you always fall for cover gimmicks. You get variants all the time. Those are gimmicks.
I buy a lot of variants, but...
But you're going to pick up those titles anyway.
No, I'm going to pick up titles that I would not be picking up at all.
No, that's... I'm saying... You pick up variants now,
right?
But you've already been you would have already picked up those titles regardless,
right?
Yeah. So now we have this promotion going on. You're going to be actually picking up a few because the few that they're teased, honestly, like I think half of what they teased, I've seen them somewhere else.
Well, but you're probably some of it you may have seen because the artist that's doing it is Aunt Lucia, mm-hmm. who I met a few years ago actually at Motor City Comic Con. And I have loved his work. He is one of the best pinup artists you'll ever find. And actually, his designs are the basis of a number of different of DC's statues that they have out there right now. But yeah, so I mean, what they teased, and it's a USA Today article that we saw. There's a Wonder Woman, you know, and kind of the old timey thing that says she can do it, you know, and there's Catwoman, which looks like one of those old pulp trashy magazines in there.
Yeah, I mean, if actually the I don't know, you don't pick up a lot of DCs, but the you mentioned the statues. Actually, there's been a bunch of ads throughout several DC Comics over the last 4 months that have featured these pinup style
mm-hmm.
girls.
Yeah,
and the statues are really nice.
Yeah.
So this is a great tie into those, and when I read the headline, I thought there was just going to be a handful of titles.
20.
Yeah, I think 52. A smaller handful. This is like
this you're is lucky. Like, you got off lucky then.
Yeah. No, 20. So I mean, and I'm not going to pick up all of them, but you know the ones that are really good, I will. So.
All right. So, what would you say to someone who says this does not reach out to grabbing more of the female audience, though?
Hmm, it's an interesting question. I
mean, how many girls are going to be like, I want to pick this up because of this pinup?
Actually, you know what though? There are so many more girls now that are interested in the pinup style.
Yeah.
That it might. I don't know that if it would turn anyone off because I think to me the pinup style is a lot more of in general is a lot more of showing femininity and power at mm-hmm. the same time, whereas I think, you know, your standard power girl type fallen out of her top thing drawn onto a cover isn't. So you may actually get a few more women that would maybe take a look that wouldn't before because they aren't shown as, yes, these are very sexy, but they're good, clean, sexy. You know, it whereas some of the other things are over the top, you know, that can be drawn out there. So, yeah.
Well, I'm looking at your Playboy.
Yeah, which I still haven't read, but it's got a Stan Lee interview in it where he says he doesn't.
Yeah, that's the reason why you pick it up.
Actually, it is.
Keep telling yourself that. And
it's not for the comics.
Oh, I actually forgot. Dude, yeah, it's been so long since I've actually read one of these.
There's comics. Well,
who reads them? You just look at the pictures.
Well, that's the same way with you in comics. Yeah. But no, there's a Stan Lee interview in there, and I've caught tidbits where
tidbits.
Yeah, I mean there's just like, you know, little nipples of information that have been.
I always enjoyed their articles. I can remember because when I subscribed to it in the early 2000s, I still remember a bunch of the articles in their like Woody Harrelson. And,
well, this has got the Stan Lee interview in it. Which,
can you keep me abreast on that?
I will. Yeah, yeah. I mean, as long as you don't make me the butt of a joke, I'm fine. Oh, but
sorry, I'm acting like a boob.
Yeah.
what else is happening out there?
Well, I want to get back to this Stan Lee interview. The one of the things that I read is that he actually says in this interview that he has no idea who Ultron is.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's like,
I want to read that.
He goes, that was created well after the time when I was doing any kind of writing.
Sure.
So I just thought that was interesting.
That's pretty funny. But, yeah, hey, understandable.
Yeah. So that's... Anyway, I'll fill you guys in on that later. No, Tony, what do you got?
That's cool.
Bacon. Hardee's and Carl's Jr. is doubling up their bacon for the X-Men movie.
Extra bacon.
Yes. I'm cool for extra bacon. I guess if they want to tie it in with the movie and because it has X, that's cool.
The coolest part about this, I mean, Hardee's and Carl's Jr. do a lot of tie-ins.
Which, by the way, neither one of those are even close to us.
You can get Hardee's down in Ohio, especially on the Turnpike.
Listeners, we're out of Michigan. We don't have either one of those restaurants or Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
We that's
horrible. And there's no White Castle on our side of the state.
Nope.
But we did finally get Sonic. Yeah, which
it's like a consolation prize.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan of Sonic. But anyway, no, the thing that I thought was neat though about the Hardee's and Carl's Jr. is that they're doing some different contests too, and one of them is like you can submit a picture of yourself to get turned into a mutant. And Kevin made the joke during pre-production that if he submitted a picture, they would just send it back and go, "You're done." Somebody already fixed you.
Derek, if you submitted a picture of yourself, it would come back with just your beard missing.
Yeah. Yeah, I got into a fight with Razor Man. Tony, there's a couple things this week that I thought you'd be interested in. One is a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic.
Yes. Well, it's not a comic. I mean, it's going to be a little miniseries, and I don't know how far the miniseries is going to go in, because obviously they just announced it. Kind of like their micro series with the villains and everything. But this is Turtles in Time, one of the coolest of the arcade games featuring the amphibians.
They are amphibians, are they?
No, right. No, yeah, yeah. They're reptiles. Yeah.
Yeah, they're reptiles.
Oh. Well, fuck me then.
Dude, on my arcade emulator, I just played Turtles in Time.
Not as good as you remember?
It was okay. I mean, like, actually, I've never played the game before.
Yeah, well,
I played the original one, but
just a quick heads up on this is that this is going to be written by Paul Eller and Eric Burnham,
and it's going to be about Ninja Turtles going through time. I mean, says it right there. I don't know what else you'd need to know.
Yeah. Well, actually, one thing, though, is that David Peterson, who is best known for doing Mouse Guard, is actually doing all the covers on there, which I think is kind of cool. So that's neat. It actually does look like it's going to be fun, and I think they're, from what I read, I think they're more or less going to be one-shots, you know, like a series of one-and-dones, which I think that's always fun because you can just pick it up and have fun and you don't have to worry about...
Yeah, kind of like the Mars Attacks crossovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, just fun one-shots.
Yeah. The other thing that I saw, Tony, is that Transformers is coming back to TV.
Yeah, and... Yes, I am excited, but the new shows are more kiddish. Like, they don't hold up to...
Well, I think the original show was meant for children, too.
You just happened to be a child when you watched them.
And they're still amazing, though. So, well, actually, I don't know. I watched a couple of them, and I'm like, that's cheesy.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
see, there was one where they're...
Which I'm surprised, because you are the biggest man-child I've ever met in my life. I'm surprised that you criticize them now.
Well, I still end up will watch them, but it's not the same feel. Like I said, it's too childlike. Well,
sure, yeah, because I mean that happens. I mean, just like our like how our conversations are different from then to now. I mean, everything's just completely different. Your mind is completely different.
Not that different, at least for me.
You know what's different? Wolverine's gonna die, maybe.
Possibly never. Yeah.
You mean comic book dying?
Yeah, as in he'll be dead for 3 months. Even if that, I mean, they just have this whole new Wolverine comic book title that just came out. Like, is he going to really die and they're just going to stop the comic book series? Well,
it's not that he's going to be dead for 3 months. It's that this is called 3 Months to Live, the new storyline that's going to be coming out. But isn't it like... Issue 13 is where, you know, we reported on a while back saying that issue 13 is going to be a game changer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. And I think that's coming out September-ish, so that's more than 3 months to live, but...
Well, 3 months in comic book time.
Oh.
Not necessarily 3 months in real time.
But even then, though, it sounds like a bunch of BS to hype up sales. I mean, what sells? Killing off characters. What sells? Bringing them back. I don't know if Wolverine really needs to boost his sales more.
Actually, Wolverine in general, though, comparatively, is not selling as well as he used to. But I blame that, honestly. And maybe, here's where I'm going to say this is actually a good plan by Marvel. Kill that fucker off for a while, and then bring...
Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, and then bring him back and put him in a max of two titles. A maximum of two titles. Because, I mean, how many damn books is he in right now? And I think that's where they're actually killing themselves, is you're oversaturating your own market. People that like Wolverine have too much to try and follow. It doesn't make sense because how can he be in, you know, how can he be over in Malaysia chasing down, that lost airplane, and then in New York City and in the woods of Canada and wherever else he is, at the same time. I mean, yeah, you got to have a little suspension of disbelief when you're reading comic books to start with, but when you make it so hard, it's like,
it still have logic. I mean, sales can't be completely a deciding factor in this, because I'm just looking at the top 50 comic book titles sold for the month of February, and I'm counting 4 Wolverine titles. Now, I don't even know what X-Men titles and Avengers titles he's in these days. But just with titles with his name on it, there's 4 of them. Now, granted, Wolverine number 1 that came out was near the top of the chart, but that probably just could be because it's the number 1. Number 1's are always going to be hot, big sellers. Period.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like he has, like, the power to just multiply, to just be all over. And so I just
That's Jamie Madrix.
And that's what I just thought. If Marvel ever wanted to take this idea, I'd be totally fine with it. Have a whole month where Jamie is in every single book with his multiples, saying the same exact lines of, "Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm here to help you," or something. Put it blatantly in there so it kind of makes fun of the, fuck, they do need to multiply. I don't know. It'd be kind of a fun Easter egg.
Yeah. Do it. Let's see, what else was out there that we saw?
Oh, Sandman's taking fucking forever to come out.
Well, we talked, like, we kind of talked about that a while ago, but it was interesting. There was Bleeding Cool had an interview with J.H. Williams III on there, and you know, yeah, we kind of dogged on him a little bit for it taking too long, but there was a quote in here that I thought was really interesting, where Williams basically said something along the lines of, "Yeah, we know it's taken a while to come out, but like he may spend like a week or something like that on a double page spread, and you know." The creators of this book, him and Neil Gaiman, are both unwilling to compromise the quality.
Oh, no, and that's, I totally love that, and I wouldn't want it any other way. However, as I believe I mentioned before, this was originally supposed to come out a year ago at this time, and then they postponed it to November, and then they now are coming out with issue 2 4 months later. Like, why did you announce it so why, long ago, if it wasn't release, even, yeah, close yeah. to being even started on.
How long of a series is this supposed to be?
It's supposed to be only a 6-issue, and it was supposed to be an every other month thing with a secondary story coming out those other months. And I know that they have the Dead Boy Detectives, which is kind of a tie-in, which that might be the other thing. But, of course, this is all stuff that was mentioned a year ago that I was getting excited for this, and now I'm still fucking excited for it. I can't wait till this book comes out. I believe next week. However,
maybe
taking a little time.
That's what I say about that. Sorry,
wake up, Kevin.
I read the first issue and
yeah, but the art scared you.
Well, yeah, this art did scare me, but
because you were looking through somebody's eyeball, teeth, mouth.
I get shivers still thinking about it, but I don't really care. I don't really care for the book myself, so that was my statement.
Well, something that I care for that I thought was cool was somebody made it's a guy known as Pee Wee Parker did a custom Michonne Barbie doll based on the TV version of the character, and Comic Book Resources actually is where I found it. So go check this out because. Holy shit, did he do a great job on it. I mean, it looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really, really beautiful.
Yeah, top notch.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a little odd because just Barbie doll arms and hands in general creep me out a little bit because they're just so, it's basically like a bone with some like, it's not humanly possible to be that skinny on your arms. It's terrifying. But really, really fucking cool on there. So, and Tony, you'd buy one of those.
Well, yeah, it's a toy.
Yeah. So. Oh God, you know what would be scary though is if you put it up on this shelf and it fell down.
Freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah. What else did you see out there this week, Tony?
Something that I find just great in the sense of opening up new avenues for comic books, everything. The PlayStation Network, is having its first show, and they're going to start doing stuff like Netflix. So if you have a PlayStation Network account, you can start watching original content. And their first show is going to be a comic book drama called Powers. Powers.
PlayStation.
Okay. Yeah. Now, do you have to have a Plus membership?
Probably.
Well,
yeah, but see, like, all the new, like, the PlayStation 4 or whatever, like, you have to buy, from what I understand, you have to buy the memberships now. It's like Xbox.
Yeah, there's some things where you can use it for free, but, yeah, others. But it's cheap enough, and if they're going to start coming up with more reasons to have, you know, one of those accounts,
yeah
that's cool.
Well, you know, and for if our listeners aren't familiar, Powers was originally, you know, came from the minds of Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Emming, that's one of those names, Oeming. That's pretty cool. I have two other really quick things here. The one is that Mark Waid is bringing Gold Key's character of Dr. Spectre.
Who's that?
Dr. Spectre. Basically, Dr. Spectre was
Dr. Gadget's cousin?
No. Dr. Spectre was a character which I think was from the early 70s from Gold Key Publishing. It's coming back to Dynamite. And so Mark Waid is kind of reviving this character. So something to kind of keep your eyes peeled for. And then the last one, Gem and the Holograms movie was announced. And so that's what I'm...
Well...
That news is outrageous.
Give me a call.
Truly outrageous.
You want to go see it, Kevin?
Just give me a call when it's actually being made. Because they don't have a script. They don't have a cast.
And
you're just being a misfit.
All right. So that's pretty much it for news. Quick shout out for Best on Tap this week, because we haven't done one in a while, but this one really kind of shout out was Zero, number 6, and the Franco Francavilla cover on here, which is just absolutely gorgeous. But Francavilla, man, that guy is just, he's pretty much just a genius in general, which, you know, we all love him on the Afterlife with Archie and everything else that he does, but yeah, so go check this one out. We'll post a picture on our website as well. So that was pretty much that. We got a couple quick little things here for Indie Turnpike. Wow. Apparently I've already had the booze in the book. Indie Turnpike this week, we got Robin Hood Legend, number 1 from Xenoscope.
With a Y?
Robin with a Y. and this is written by Pat Shand, who... I'm actually super excited. He just got announced being at Motor City.
Oh, cool.
So I'm very excited to actually get to meet this guy in person. Pencils by Larry Watts. Colors by Slamet Muggiano. And letters by Jim Campbell. This book is, I believe, this is like the third series of the Robin Hood books. And this is issue 1 of 5. And in this one... in the last, like the first series introduced Robin, you know, and if you're not familiar with the Xenoscope stories, they kind of take their little twists on old stories and fairy tales and this and that, and their different worlds. And this is their take on the current reintroduction of a Robin Hood character. In the last series, she had a lot of bad shit happen to her. And I'm not going to get into too much because they really, you know, Shand does a really, really nice job. If you didn't read volume 1 or 2 of the Robin Hood stories, where you can pick this up and you're like, okay, yeah, I didn't read that, but I have enough knowledge now to go forward comfortably with this character and with this story. This is a great, great character because of the fact where a lot of times you see these stories and you think, okay, yeah, you're taking this approach with it. This character has so much depth and so much humanity in it, which is one of the reasons that I really wanted to bring it up, that Shand just really goes out of the way to show that, you know what, this is a woman who, yeah, she's got some gifts in the fact that she's, you know, a great marksman, and she goes out of her way to steal from the rich and give to the poor and all that, but she struggles with a lot of very hurtful emotions and trying to get over things and trying to do what's right. And that's why I really thought that this book should be brought up today. It is a good story. It's dark. It's not necessarily uplifting as of yet, but it is, there is a lot of good strength in a strong female character, which a lot of times this industry misses. I do have to give a shout out too, because I got the bee cover, which was done by Jenny Friesen, which absolutely love her work.
I don't see any bees.
Yeah, well, those are nice C's. but yeah, no, this is in overall, I mean, the artwork in here by Watts, really nice layouts. He does some really, really good panel work in here too, where unlike a lot of the other books that you'll see out there, he utilizes the gutters in a lot of it. And I just thought that it was really nice. You've got some overlapping panels in here, and the colors on here really did bring this story to life as well. So great job all around on on the creative team on that, and definitely looking forward to picking up issue two. So if you didn't pick up any of the other ones, just go grab this one and jump on, and you'll be fine. So last thing then, best on tap.
Booze in a book.
Booze in a book. Yeah, I'm going to have more booze in my book. Wow, I'm jacked up apparently. Daredevil number one, volume 4 or 5. I don't know what volume it's on now, but it's the all new Marvel Now Daredevil number one.
52.
What's that?
I said 52.
Yeah.
Throw that in.
Yeah. Now, on this one, I did actually pick up the variant cover, which was the Paul Rivera cover on here, where the little cord coming out of his billy clubs actually creates the entire radar of the city behind him, which was gorgeous. But I am pairing Daredevil number one with a Long Hammer IPA from Red Hook Brewing, and it's got a 6.2 alcohol by volume. The reason I'm pairing this, I don't normally like IPAs. You guys know this.
Sure. I mean, they're nasty.
Yeah, on some occasions.
No, it's the beer drinker's beer.
It's the beer snob's beer, is what I think.
Thank you for saying that. I love good beer.
But, you know, normally IPAs are just, have gotten so overhopped. It's just, you know, it just shoves it right up in your face. And number one issues kind of have that same thing where it's like, we're really going to overdo it on the first issue. This was such a nice, subtle first issue and story. And for an IPA, I got to say, this is actually a pretty subtle, nice, smooth IPA. The catch is that Long Hammer can reach you from across the room and smack you upside the head after you've had a couple of them. And this book, when I got to the end, I got sucker punched with a Long Hammer. There is a huge shocker at the end of this book, just like when you get done with a couple of these. Oh, boy. So
dude, I took your suggestion last week, man.
The really dirty Girl Scout.
I had one of those last night.
Yeah, pretty tasty, isn't it?
Yeah, oh my gosh, it was really good.
Yeah, way better than green beer.
I saw more people drinking green beer than your shit, so they listened to my advice.
Yeah, I highly doubt that. All right, guys, what do we got for last call?
Where did they go?
Iron Man number one, well, 23 point now. Very, very good. I am just loving fucking that ride. Letter 44, continuing on the story. Did you get a chance to read that, Derek?
It better continue on the story.
It's new story. No, actually, that's the one that I did not
get. Honestly, Derek, what you need to do is just start buying, just banking them, banking your letter 44 issues.
We were talking about this the other night.
Yeah, because honestly, like I was so disappointed at the end. You're like, I'm gonna wait now. How long?
Yeah, like Kevin,
for the next issue.
That's a good thing though, because I mean, basically, what you're saying is that it wouldn't be a complete episode if Tony's phone doesn't go off.
Oops, it's a ghost. That's my phone.
Yeah, but no, the fact that letter 44, that you are loving it so much that like you're like, it reads too damn fast. Like I'm done with it, and I'm like, what the fuck? I want more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a hell of a testimonial though, when you're like, you feel like you got ripped off because it was so good that you read it so fast.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony, what else did you have in your stack there?
I have a couple I haven't got to, but the one that just, it's so phenomenal is The God is Dead. This book is just continuing to be amazing.
Yeah, you were telling me, because I admit I dropped it from my poll just because I had just too much other stuff.
You should pick it back up. It's.
Yeah. Uncanny X-Men, number 19 point now, number one. Yeah. It's...
It's worthy of a mention during this segment.
It's worthy of a mention, and that's as far as I'll go with it. you know, but Rocket Girl number 4. This was a series that everybody should be reading. Loki Ragnarok and Roll number 2 of 4. Actually,
I read your review on drunkoncomics.com the other day.
That's actually what I was going to say. I was so inspired by this book, knowing that with the other stuff that came out, that I probably wasn't going to get a chance to do a full review on this book, that I actually went onto drunkoncomics.com and actually wrote my first review, which, yeah.
Wow, maybe you'll inspire other people to write their own reviews.
Yeah, and if people do want to write reviews for us, you can get in touch with us through the website or Twitter or Facebook, and we'll give you the details. My last one, which actually came out last week, but I didn't get my copy till this week, was Volume 1 of The Tales of Mr. Ree from our good friend Dirk Manning, and it's from Devil's Due Publishing. So go pick up that little TPB, and you'll have fun with that one.
I got it. Clockwork Angels.
We were talking about that.
Yeah, when we were at the shop, we kept looking, and I was like, man, that train and the blue, like, fucking the art looked amazing in that.
Oh, yeah, 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 definitely. There are actually, it was a lot of Twitter buzz through Boom's site about the art on this. And part of the reason why I picked it up, this is not a great first issue, but it's a good lead-in to possibly a lot of interesting things to happen going on. I probably could nitpick this book a little bit, but I'm mentioning it because of the art, but also I think this actually could develop into a really great epic story.
Are you a Rush fan?
I am.
Well, then that's probably why you
that's another reason why I picked it up, too.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's from, what is it, Neil Perth?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And then Disney's Kingdom, Seekers of the Weird.
How is
number it? Number 3, this is actually, number 2, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this. But number three pulls it back, and I'm excited for number 4. This is an unexpected pick, unexpected surprise.
Cool.
And actually, I had a good conversation with the guy at the comic book shop about this book, and how actually he really enjoys the series.
Very cool. One note for listeners that have been downloading our podcast directly from our website. If you have an Android phone, you can now go to Stitcher and get us there. So you don't have to go download directly from our site.
I think they also have a Windows 8 app as well.
Yeah. And I'm guessing probably a Kindle app and all that other stuff. I'm just guessing. But
I'm not sure, but
I know there's an iPhone app too. So if you don't like the
iTunes. If you don't use iTunes, you use Stitcher, which is great. Actually, that's where I get all my NPR feeds from. Yeah. So
you can get us online at drunkoncomics.com. You can get us on iTunes. You can get us on Stitcher now. You can find us other places too, right, Tony?
Yes, like your local bar. Mm-hmm. Well, not your local bar, our local bar.
Well, if you'd like us to come to your local bar, just let us know, and we'll see what we can do about that.
Mm-hmm. We'll make an arrangement. You know, we'll sneak into your house. We'll turn on some flashlights and see what happens.
Fuck you guys!
All right, guys. I think that pretty much does it for us.
Yep. Keep reading your comic books, and we'll be back to you again next week to talk about them. See ya.
Casper, the friendly ghost, the friendliest ghost around.
I want to read some Richie Rich now.
No, you didn't mean to do all the things you put me through. After all is said and done, never get